You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton.
Episode 100, Disney Bets on Streaming. Well, folks, we've made it to episode 100. Can you believe it? We've made 100 of these things. Time flies. This week, Michael and I talked about how Disney is starting up their own streaming service, something similar to what Netflix does, except with the Disney catalog. We don't know exactly what content is going to make it, whether it's going to be limited, whether it's going to be the entire Disney archives. We don't know at this point. What we do know is that Disney has agreed to leave the Marvel TV series on Netflix. But as far as most of their stuff, it's getting pulled off. So what does this mean for Disney? A lot of people on the internet are, you know, rightly furious about this. There is a lot of talk about how people don't want to pay for yet another streaming service, which is understandable. As we move away from the old model of cable TV and we move to an a la carte model, that allows the consumer to have a lot more choice. But what's counterintuitive is when all of these companies, Disney, HBO, AMC, Showcase, if everybody starts unbundling and offering their own channels as paid services, well, it's not really going to be cost-effective for consumers, because even if each channel is, say, $5 to $10 a month, that's going to quickly add up, and suddenly it's not going to be cheap. And I think that's the illusion of the a la carte model. I think that's my own personal opinion, that by unbundling everything, it's somehow going to miraculously make things cheaper. Now, will it give you more choice? Absolutely, it gives you more choice to choose exactly what you want to watch. So it remains to be seen whether or not this is going to work. We know Disney certainly has the capital to start something like this, but we're not really confident that they have the talent in-house to do this, because this is really new territory for them. They certainly have the ability to go out and hire a team to do this. So we get into that discussion and more. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up next on The Impromptu.
So, there has been a disturbance in the Force, the Disney Force. Disney has apparently decided to cut ties with Netflix and make their own damn streaming service with blackjack and hookers. No, not either of those things. I guess an appropriate analog would be with... I can't think of anything. They've had gambling in Disney movies. And Pirates of the Caribbean did have prostitutes, I think. I don't know.
Anyways, not like they make only G-rated movies.
Yeah, I know. Anyways, so yeah, they have apparently decided to make their own streaming service. And I think it's a dumb idea. I think they are going to lose money. And this is why. People do not want to spend $9.99 a month times every goddamn content provider in the world. HBO, Netflix, Hulu, Disney, Showtime, like AMC. It's death by a thousand cuts. Nobody is going to pay for all of these. Nobody. I mean, people have had cable packages for way too long, and they expect everything for one price. They don't want to pay 15 different subscription fees just to watch everything they want to watch. So, I mean, the entire streaming industry really lends itself to a monopoly, because people just want one payment per month that gives them everything.
I agree, and that's ideal, but I would fire back and say from a brand perspective that having control over their own content, having their own platform probably makes sense, at least to Disney. Because if you think about it, I mean, Disney does for the most part, although they have retail partners, you know, they like to control the experience, right? Like Disneyland.
They do.
I mean, they don't outsource Disneyland. When a new Disneyland theme park is made, it's under very tight control and scrutiny, and Disney's very involved with this, with the whole process. So I think it does make sense. Will consumers accept another streaming service? I mean, time will tell, but I mean, they may not welcome it with open arms, but I have a feeling people will end up paying for it anyways because they want their kids to access that content. And let's face it, it's not like Netflix had a ton of Disney content.
They had all the Disney content.
Well, what?
Marvel, Star Wars.
Okay, Marvel,
Disney and Pixar
they announced
movies.
Marvel will stay on Netflix, but there were plenty, at least on Netflix Canada. I mean, there
well,
are a ton of
Netflix
Disney.
Canada is a whole other story, but right. They've had quite a lot of Pixar films and quite a few of the animated films as well.
Yeah,
not all
I don't know
of
about
them.
That. I mean, a lot
not
of the classics. A lot of the classics. I mean, I haven't seen Cinderella, Beauty and the Beast on there. I haven't seen Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Yeah, the older ones they don't on Netflix Canada. Netflix Canada has the more recent ones, but it's all on Netflix America, every single one. And at least I think every single one. But anyways, I think the argument that they want to control their experience is bullshit because a streaming service is not a theme park. A streaming service is not a retail store. A streaming service is, here's your content. Like, the content is the experience. What are they going to do differently exactly? How is Disney streaming going to be some magical experience compared to Netflix? The short answer is, it isn't. It's going to be a video player. You click on the movie you want, it plays.
I mean,
that's it. It doesn't need to
Disney
be special.
Need to pay Netflix to have... my understanding is that Netflix is the one that has to pay for the privilege,
yes,
the license to have their stuff.
Yes.
So then that doesn't really make sense to me, I guess. Then.
No, exactly. Like, they are going to be spending money to build this thing.
The only thing, I go back to brand strength and brand awareness, the Disney streaming channel probably means a big deal to them as a company.
It means a big deal to some marketer who thinks it'll be a big deal.
Right.
Like, nobody is going, oh, gee, I want the Disney Vault app that gives me every Disney thing ever for $19.99 a month. Nobody is asking for that. They already have a wide variety of outlets where people can purchase their content. They don't need another one. So for them to just try and, like, really what it is... It is the experience thing, but only so far as they don't want to be beholden to somebody else. Like, they want to say, they don't want to enter a situation where Netflix could go, well, we have all this original content and we don't need you anymore, so we're just not going to have Disney stuff. We're not going to keep paying you.
It does make sense when you think about it that way, too, because, of course, Netflix, I mean... It probably is mostly about that one thing, because Netflix is going to want to promote their own content, their own Netflix original, and the Disney stuff takes a back seat. So Disney's probably thinking, why the hell are we bothering with these guys? We have a strong brand. People will probably pay $10 a month, and then we can promote the hell out of whatever it is that we're making that year.
That's where the trap is. Because they think that people will care enough to buy it. There will be some diehard Disney fans who absolutely will pay. But the vast majority of people will not. And they will lose money. Because that's essentially the problem. They think it's going to do well for them. They think that by taking their content off of Netflix, by having their own platform, it'll somehow solve all of these problems for them. But for the whole marketing thing, like, they don't need to market Disney content on a special streaming service. It's a known property. People will watch wherever it is. Like, people will want to watch Frozen 2 regardless of if there's a giant splash banner on DisneyStream.com. Like, they went to the movie theater, they saw the movie with their kids want to watch it 15 billion times. They are going to go to wherever it is available. Like, they don't need to be primed to purchase the content. They're already primed. They've been to the theater, they've seen it, they've watched the trailers. Like, if this was some indie studio that wanted to promote their own content, sure, I could see that, because an indie studio would be much stronger on its own promoting their shows and TV and movies, because then they would stand apart from the crowd on Netflix, because Netflix has a lot of stuff, so it's easy to miss things. So, I mean, if you're an indie studio, sure, that might make a lot of sense, because then you get to highlight the unique content that you're doing. But Disney is so big that they no longer need to worry about that.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know if this was ever attempted during negotiations with Netflix, but they could have at least, and maybe they did, but why not ask Netflix for a category that's specific to Disney? Like, they have anime, right? And yeah, they have kids, but why not ask if Netflix might be willing to put a category called Disney?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they would be.
Honestly, I bet nobody even considered it. I think this was entirely driven...
That would have been way easier. I mean, think about the platform. I mean, the resources that they need to build something like this.
Yeah,
to
the
support.
Developers.
I mean, this is...
The servers.
I'm not saying they don't have the money. They clearly have the money to do it.
Oh, yeah, they have the money, but
I don't know. I mean,
are they going to really be able to run a service that has anywhere near the amount of quality and uptime?
It's going to take time. It's going to take time. It may have some growing
pains. And they
don't
have the proprietary technologies that Netflix does.
They've been doing it a long time and they know how to do it well.
Exactly.
Put your Netflix hat on for a sec. If Disney comes to you and says, we want a Disney, like, we want a new category on the Netflix service called Disney with all of our stuff in there, grouped in there. Do you think Netflix would really say no to that?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, maybe they would say, okay, you got to pay us a fee for that.
Yeah, like, I think
That's a privilege, so you probably have to pay for it.
Yeah, if Netflix wants to become the future of TV, and I feel like that's maybe part of their plan, it makes sense to eventually start offering branded channels. Sure, we have all these categories, but then, like, up at the top, you could have Netflix Originals, you could have Disney,
HBO,
you could have
AMC,
HBO, AMC. Yeah. Like, Netflix could be the bridge to all of that content. So, I mean, by offering branded channels, they're packing in that promotion, that marketing, but keeping it within the Netflix platform. Like, it's a win-win for them. They give the studios what they want and they get to keep the content. But I don't know, maybe they didn't want to do that. Maybe they just let Disney go. I don't know what happened in those negotiations, though apparently Netflix is now trying to negotiate to keep the content. So it sounds to me like this was just a decision that Disney made to try and go on their own. And it really smells to me like the kind of stupid executive decision where it's like, why do we have our stuff on Netflix? Why don't we have our own thing? Without really thinking through the ramifications of that decision, just kind of going for it.
Yeah, that could be the case.
Like, Just the fact that Netflix is trying to negotiate to keep the content now after the fact suggests to me that they were taken by surprise and that they didn't know about it beforehand. Right. So, yeah, like this really feels to me like some dumb corporate decision driven by some numbers on a spreadsheet. And ultimately, I don't think it will succeed. And I think hopefully it will serve as a lesson to any of these big companies that think they can do their own Netflix, because they just can't.
Yeah.
And even if they can, no one is going to want to buy it, because people want consistency. People want one place they can go to for everything that they want.
Of course.
That's why Amazon succeeds.
Right. But apparently, right? HBO, like, there are some companies that are doing well with their own branded channel streaming service. I mean, the HBO Go thing apparently is doing well in the US.
Well, because HBO Go,
but it's like $5 a month.
It is. It's cheap, and it's the only way to watch Game of Thrones.
Right.
So, yeah, people are just like, yes, please. Like, nothing Disney has is Game of Thrones. Let's put it that way. Like, even if, and I don't think they would do this, like, pretty much the only way to get people to pay for Disney streaming is if they did something like, 2 days after the release of Last Jedi, we will put The Last Jedi exclusively on the streaming service.
I guarantee you they'll do something like that, because they have the power to do that.
Yeah, but that would hurt ticket sales, though.
Right, but they have to have some level of exclusivity to it, right?
They do.
Now, I'm not saying that they're going to be successful with this, because Disney is not... Disney has failed before with other big, expensive endeavors.
Oh, yes.
In their theme parks and, mm-hmm. in other ways. So, I mean, who's to say that a year down the road after running that thing that they'll find out, oh, shit, this is way too expensive and complicated, and they'll have to shut it down. Or maybe not enough people sign up for it. Yeah. Anything can really happen.
Oh, yeah.
So it remains to be seen. It's not a guarantee that it's going to be a success just because of the Disney name.
No, exactly.
Which is a mistake on their part if they think that.
Yeah. Well, and they haven't done the hard work. Like, what is their development team? How many engineers do they have? Do they have people that can scale server platforms?
Well, they probably have to do hiring.
Yeah. And I mean,
did they even announce when this is going to be available?
Like, supposedly 2018.
Okay. So they probably had this in the works for a while.
Maybe. But
I mean, it's not like they're going to run this on a server in a closet somewhere.
Oh,
I mean,
no, of
they would
course
have
not.
Needed
but...
like at least a year or more, probably 2 years to really think of and fully develop and flesh out a service like this.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, anyone could fire up an instance on Amazon, you know,
yeah,
web services, but I mean, that doesn't mean that you know how to run a service like this at scale.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, does Disney have anything that's comparable that runs on a sort of scale web services sort of deal? I mean, do they have anything like that?
No.
I very much doubt it.
The only thing that would even come close would probably be the systems that run the Magic Band technology in the theme parks, but those are closed systems.
I see. Okay.
They're nowhere near the scale of what would be needed here. So, yeah. They would basically need to hire former Netflix engineers or something. Like, there'd be no other way to really get something like this off the ground. Not necessarily Netflix, like Netflix, Hulu, YouTube, like anybody that's worked on
ex-Google employees, people that know how
video
to work
platforms.
On these. Yeah, exactly.
Vimeo.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, if they could get a bunch of people who used to work at those places or poach a few people, sure, they could maybe build something. But I don't know that it would ever quite be as good as Netflix, because they've done the hard work and they even have patents on some of the stuff they've come up with. Though they have open sourced a lot of stuff as well. So
I'm not, I mean, it's not like I'm a huge Disney fan, to be honest, but I mean, if the service runs as reliably as Netflix, if it's $10 a month and you get access to literally everything Disney has ever made,
yeah,
that will be a good deal. I mean, honestly, for $10.
Yeah, like,
I don't think most parents will probably think twice about paying an extra $10 for all of that.
It's probable.
Like, they'll probably pack it full of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if it was just like, oh, watch all the like feature films we've ever done.
I think it's going to be, my suspicion is going to be more than that.
Yeah. Like if it was literally everything, all of the old shorts, all of the old TV series and like commentary and bonus stuff.
I mean, you know, that they used to do those commercials that I think they may still do this, the bullshit scarcity commercials of we're putting Cinderella back in the vault and it's going away for 20 years. Like, if they do take all those classics and put that on their service, it'll probably be worth it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they did the artificial scarcity thing until streaming came along.
Right.
Like, it was always like, we've taken it out of the Disney vault, now on Blu-ray.
Aren't
in
people
full
wise
1080p?
I mean, seriously, I don't understand why they would still do that. I mean, I remember a few years ago I saw an ad for something like that. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense today.
Well, yeah. I mean, now with iTunes and streaming and everything, like, they have no need for that because you can just put everything up and people can buy it whenever they want. So, yeah.
So closing thoughts on the service. People are going to go kicking and screaming. They don't want to pay an extra anything, really.
Yeah.
They really ideally want everything on one service. Of course, that's never going to happen because companies like Disney here that do not want to license all of their content to Netflix, that want control.
Yeah.
So it remains to be seen whether or not this is going to be, if this is going to work. So I'm going to try to give them the benefit of the doubt that they can, because they have the money, to hire the right people to build
this
service.
That's really the only thing that's keeping it from being a certain disaster.
Well, yeah, because they have the bankroll for this.
What's your superpower,
throw
Disney?
Throw cash at it.
I have lots of money.
Throw the cash at it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Disney, if you can get your act together and get a reliable service and just make sure that you get all of your content that people care about in there, then it might work.
Yeah.
But they got to keep it at $9.99 a month.
Yeah. It definitely could work if it's everything. Like, if they literally call it the Disney Vault and it just has everything they've ever done, literally, yeah, people will buy that.
Yeah.
People will pay
for
that.
Heck, I think I may consider paying for that if it was $10 a month.
Yeah.
At least for a while so I could watch some stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I don't think that's the other problem too. They don't produce content fast enough to justify continued subscription. People could subscribe for bursts at a time, watch whatever they want to watch, and then cancel.
But they do those direct-to-video, and they've been doing this more and more now with these sequels that go direct to video.
They don't do that as much anymore.
There's a new Puss in Boots series on Netflix that's Disney.
Yeah.
That's a series.
Disney?
It's an ongoing.
I thought that was DreamWorks.
Oh, I could be wrong. I thought it was Disney.
Puss in Boots and Shrek is DreamWorks.
I thought it was Disney.
Yeah, no. Disney, they cut back on that quite a lot in the early 2000s. Like the 90s, there was a shit ton of that. But lately, they've kind of stopped. And it's kind of all about the Marvel movies, the Star Wars movies.
All the stuff that's staying on Netflix.
The Pixar movies and everything that the new Walt Disney Animation Studio is doing.
Well, the stuff that you and I care about, mostly the adult stuff, is staying on Netflix, thankfully.
Yeah, and this only affects Netflix in the States, by the way. So outside of the U.S.,
I was not aware
we are actually fine.
Well, for now. For until now. Until they eventually get to us.
Because, yeah, like this Disney thing, it's totally going to be U.S. only to start with. Because
oh, probably. Like, as are most of those types of services.
As with any company trying to do something like this.
Because Amazon Prime Video took years to get here. We still don't have HBO Go. We still don't have CBS streaming.
Well, we're never going to get HBO Go.
Why is that?
Because of Bell Media.
Oh, right. Bell Media. I think we touched on that previously about, we were talking offline about the new Star Trek Discovery series, and I was voicing my concerns about, well, how can I watch this if I don't have cable? And you said that
Crave
TV, which is owned by Bell, has the rights for it.
Yep.
So I signed up for that. So we'll see. Actually, Crave TV looks like it actually has a lot.
It has a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
like we started watching Letterkenny the other day, which is pretty awesome.
Although I haven't checked, I'm in desperate need of a new streaming device, and I'm not sure if I want a new Roku or an Apple TV. Do you know if the Crave TV app is available here on Apple TV?
Yes, it is. I installed it.
So
the
maybe
other day.
I need to buy an Apple TV then.
Do not buy one yet.
Why is that? It's not like there's another one that's around the corner that might support 4K TVs.
But
is there?
Wait, there is.
No, that's a fallacy. That's you're just making that up.
No.
Apple doesn't care about 4K.
No,
it's
in the HomePod code, I'm afraid.
Ah, yes.
That darn HomePod code just revealing all of Apple's secrets all the time. Still finding things even a week after, you know.
We're saying this as people listening to this, which who have probably heard previous episodes are shaking their head because they know that there's a new Apple TV coming.
Yes. Yes, there is. 4K HDR.
So speaking of new releases, why don't we talk about something that has been much maligned, which apparently is, well, I'm not sure if it's no longer maligned, but apparently it's substantially better game, and that is No Man's Sky.
Yes.
Which, I'm not even sure what the right term is. Came out of the gate on fire. No, it kind of petered out. I mean,
Within,
I think they had most of the users playing it within the first couple of months, and then it just kind of died.
It because died the game, within a week or
it
two.
It wasn't what they really wanted to ship, but they shipped it anyway. And my understanding is that we had a recent big patch, and I think we've had a total of three or four big patches that have added a lot of content, which I'll let you get into, but apparently it's like a new game.
Yeah, so this is patch 1.3 called Atlas Rising, and we're now basically a year since No Man's Sky came out. I think it came out around now, last year?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think it's been that long.
Yeah.
God, time flies, though. It doesn't feel like it came out that long ago.
Yeah, so I seem to recall our episode on that was quite heavy. I was basically like, this is the worst thing ever. And
because you played it a bit.
I did,
you?
Yes.
Right. And I remember when we talked about that, I did not.
Yeah.
But you had a lot of things to say about it.
Yeah. I mean, I pre-ordered it. I totally bought into the hype. And
I'm
I was
so glad it didn't do that.
Supremely disappointed. Listeners, you can roll back in our archive a year and find that episode. I can't remember what it was called.
Well, let's condense
somewhere
it
in there.
Within a couple of minutes, I mean, effectively, the initial version that shipped, you really didn't do much of anything, did you? Other than go to planets and kind of walk around?
Yeah, it had basically no story at all. There was no real content beyond exploring planets, grabbing resources, crafting new things, eventually affording enough to be able to buy other ships, but that was never really explained very well.
And could you do anything with your ships at that time? Like upgrade them, do anything with them?
Yeah, like you could craft new weapons, you could craft like better engines and shields and things, but none of it was even remotely close to what they were promising.
Like you were saying, there's no real story, so what's the point of upgrading your ship? There's no enemy. Is there?
Well, there's like space pirates and you can like raid freighters and stuff. But
were those all AI driven?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they claimed that you could possibly run into somebody in the universe as unlikely as that would
be. If that happened.
It did not.
So bring us up to speed. So where is the game now in 2017 as of August?
Okay, so their first big patch added base building. So you were able to go to a planet and set up a base and construct it and add all of these stations that would enable like market access, and you could craft different things and a few other options. And I think it added like a partial quest system, sort of. And yeah, like it was cool, but it didn't really add a ton of depth to the game. Then the second patch, they had ground vehicles. So you could drive around the planets, which again, it was cool, but it didn't really add a ton of stuff. It was like, okay, you've landed on the 4 millionth planet you've found. Better drive around it, I guess. And now we come to this August with this patch, and they have completely overhauled everything. They upgraded the graphics.
Yeah, apparently it runs a lot smoother, too.
It's smoother.
And it runs properly on PS4 Pro.
Yep. They have also added rudimentary multiplayer. So you can now see up to 15 other players nearby as glowing orbs. Yeah, it's weird.
The
assumption is if they continue to update the game, they will add actual multiplayer at some point. But this is basically just a proof of concept to show that they can actually have multiple players running around in the same universe. And then they added an actual quest system. So now every space station, the guy that you would normally go and talk to and learn some alien words and nothing much else of consequence, now you can actually get missions from those people. And there is an actual story in the game now.
So sort of almost like a Destiny thing where you get missions from people and you got to go do stuff and... like, what are you doing on these missions?
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of bounty driven. Like, okay, go kill some space pirates or go collect this from this planet. Right. I don't know. I haven't played it yet, so.
To what end, though? Is it just for upgrading?
Yeah, like you get rewards, but that's like totally separate to the actual story. So they've added an entire proper story to the game, supposedly. Again, I haven't played it yet, so I don't know.
You mean they added the game to the game
They added the game to the game. There are now crashed freighters on planets that you can loot, which is something they showed off before the game shipped.
Okay, that's kind of cool.
Over a year ago. Right. And is now finally a feature.
You know what's sad is that people buying the game today that had no idea about that are not buying that thing. Oh, this is so cool. Not realizing.
Why did people hate it? Yeah,
actually
exactly.
Should have shipped like that.
Yeah. They've also finally added portals to planets. So you can find portals that will enable you to go across the galaxy to various other worlds. Basically a Stargate system. There's even like a rotary dial thing in front of the portal. So yeah, it's basically a Stargate. And that was something else they promised over a year ago that never made it into the final game. So in the last patch, they introduced freighters. You can actually construct or buy a freighter, and it costs a lot, like a lot. And you can use it to store all of your shit. You can dock your ships in there. You can use the base building stuff to actually build out the interior of the freighter and things, which is cool. This patch adds the ability to actually pilot the freighter, so you can take it to different systems. So if you have multiple bases, you can actually just run it between all of those systems or between the planets.
Do you need a special license to fly?
I don't believe so, no. But so
my class 5 isn't going to work exactly.
Yeah. They have improved combat, space combat. They've added missiles as a weapon type. Before, there were just pulse lasers and like lasers that would just go psh. So now there are missiles, so that's cool. They also have improved several menu screens and the galaxy map, though I've heard they haven't improved it that much and it's still kind of annoying. Same for flying on a planet. they said that the patch allows you to fly lower to the ground and that you can actually crash. That's not true. You can fly lower, yes, but you still get stopped short of actually hitting the ground, to the point where the whole thing just kind of feels like a theme park ride because you can't actually get hurt. Like, you can never actually crash into the ground. It won't let you, which...
Was that a good thing or bad thing?
It just kind of makes it feel less like a simulation because, there's no real danger. Like, you can't actually crash your ship. Supposedly, you can, fly into a rock or something, but you can't actually crash into the ground. So...
That could have been spectacular, though.
Yeah. It's a little disappointing. They also added a terrain manipulator tool, so you can actually grow terrain into weird shapes. You can dig canyons and trenches, so they've kind of made it a bit like Minecraft. But really, that's just to supplement the base building so that you can, design cool, structures that go around.
That, to me, sounds like the most interesting aspect of it, to be able to build stuff like that.
Yeah, but... The whole point of the game is that you have an entire universe. So to limit what you're doing to one planet is odd. It's just kind of weird to be like, oh, we have a million planets. You can never explore all of them. But then at the same time also, oh, set up shop on this one specific planet and build a base here. And this is your planet now.
But you can't possibly... I mean, there's nothing stopping you from exploring.
No, of course not.
I mean, you can't possibly visit every single planet.
No.
I mean, because they're randomly generated.
Well, it was randomly generated. Now the map is the map, I think, more or less.
But it's probably too big for one person to realistically...
Yeah, you end up starting in a different place every time.
Right.
When you restart the game. You end up seeing different parts of the whole.
Right. Now, can you easily get to, if you exit out of the game, do you lose what you've created or can you come back to that?
No, you can. It gets saved.
And nobody, I'm assuming no other players can just claim your space where you are.
No, they haven't added anything like that. So, yeah, it just feels odd.
It might be interesting, though, if they add that. As an adversarial type thing where players can attack your base and you can defend it and you can build automated turrets.
I guess.
Design your own automated defense system.
Yeah,
I suppose. See how well it works.
But there's still the fundamental problem of...
That would almost be like a StarCraft type thing.
Maybe. But again, there's a fundamental issue because you have this base on this one planet, but you can warp 50 star systems away. How do you get back? I mean, is there a portal on every planet? Probably not.
What do you mean? With this ship, you've got a warp drive ship.
Right. But the warp drive can only warp you one star system at a time.
Oh, I see.
Unless you have an upgraded one, but even then you can only jump across so many systems at a time.
That seems like a weird arbitrary way of doing it.
And it costs a special kind of fuel that you have to refill.
Okay.
By landing on a planet and
I'm
finding it.
I'm thinking by Star Trek terms, where you just go as far as you want.
Yeah, no.
It might take you a long time to get there.
There's an actual resource that charges the jump drive, and you have to craft them. And the only way to craft them is to get these several rare resources. So if you start to run out, you then have to land on a planet and go looking for it. And it just becomes really tedious.
The way they implemented it might be tedious, but it's not totally unreasonable that they have a finite fuel source. Because I think even the Enterprise that's why they have a 5-year mission, because the dilithium crystals need to be replenished or something like that.
Yeah. They never really explained it.
They don't have an infinite replenishable source of energy.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's cool and all, but you see the problem, right?
I see the problem.
You have a base here, but then you're this many systems away.
It's going to get annoying. You're not going to want to travel.
Yeah. Or you're not going to want to set up a base to begin with.
Right.
Because if you start exploring, you're going to get far enough away from the base that you're never really going to be able to go back to it. So, I mean, either you just build this string of bases along the way, or I don't know. I think I touched on this in the original episode. I said like something like it's trying to do too much at the same time.
Yeah.
And it ends up doing nothing at all.
Well, because for the longest time, nobody really even understood, what is this?
Yeah.
That was the biggest question. Like, what do you do? Just tell us what you're supposed to do. Is there a story?
Well, now there is.
Now there is, a year later.
Supposedly. Like, I don't know if it's any good. But yeah, like, they just kind of, I think I said at the time, like, they just kind of built this game that was technically impressive. Like, oh, look, we can dynamically generate 50 quintillion planets. Look at how cool and awesome we are. Oh, well, what do you do with those 50 quintillion planets?
I think we even argued about how it seemed almost like let's try to impress people with our technology, and they forgot about the substance.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's no substance.
It's like, great. We're the ones that got to play it. We're not angel investors trying to invest in your company to make this thing. Like, you don't have anything to prove to us. We just want something that is enjoyable and fun.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And they didn't deliver on that originally.
No, they did
not.
And
I don't know if they ever recouped their money, to be honest with you. I hope they did, but
it
seemed like a bloody disaster.
They've been able to continue development, so they made some amount of money.
I mean, they obviously have to pay people, so they're making money, but I guess they must still be selling copies on the PlayStation Store.
I suppose. I mean, maybe at this point it's a labor of love. They're just continuing on in the hopes that...
I think because they had a partnership with Sony, they must have...
Yeah.
Received a lot of money from Sony.
They did, but I think it was part of the contract that it had to sell so many units and it had to get like a score of whatever, like these things usually do. It's like, well, we're going to support you and market you and you have to do really well or else. And they ended up with the or else, I think. So I don't know what their situation is, like if they've run out of money or it's just three people working on it because they care. I don't know what it is at this point, but yeah, it was a mess and it's probably gonna continue to be a mess.
So at this point, do you think it's safe to at least recommend people try the game? The price has come down in the game.
Yeah, I mean, if you can pick it up for cheap enough, sure.
Like $30. I don't know what they're selling at now, but I mean, I'd probably pay $30 for that now.
Yeah. I mean, you would definitely get that much enjoyment out of it for sure. Like, it's definitely not a $60 game. Maybe the patch has made it worth it. I don't know. Probably not, I would guess. I think it still has a lot of fundamental issues with it that will never fully be resolved.
Just for some quick clarity for me, because I'm not sure if the game now supports 60 frame rates per second on the PS4 Pro. Do you know if...
I have no idea.
They addressed that? Okay.
I have no idea.
Because I heard the performance has improved on the Pro and supposedly it's been optimized.
I haven't read the full patch notes yet. Yeah. I've just seen the coverage on Polygon and stuff.
Okay. Well, we'll look it up. We'll put a link to the show, to the release notes of that patch in there, and we'll address it there for people that want to look that up.
Yeah. So yeah, if you can get it for cheap enough, pick it up, check it out. It's going to be about that enjoyable. I don't know.
Okay. You've been listening to the Impromptu One Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there, and wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.